welcome to another episode of the Koshcast. You can follow us at underscore the Kosh on Twitter. This is harder than it seems.
It really is.
Because Alex does this every week, and if you didn't notice, you don't hear his sultry English accent.
No, you don't, but I'm going to pretend to be English tonight.
That's close enough. So,
no, that's terrible.
I'm Mohamed, and I've got Bernie here with me today. Alex is... Where is he?
He was in London.
He was in London.
Not England, Ontario.
Yep.
For Easter, I think.
Correct. It's Easter long weekend here in Canada. Riche is, I think, studying for his exams. He's got a few things going on. So
he's the busiest person on earth,
yes,
to be honest. Riche has a lot going on, people.
That's true. That's true. So just me and you.
Yeah, yeah.
All right. Where do you want to start? Let's start with, I think, one of the biggest news this week, which was LAFC getting Zlatan.
Yeah.
That was...
Unbelievable.
It's like almost, you know when you write something and you're like, this is unrealistic? It was one of those. But it seemed like every time one of these big players joins MLS, they have to start so high.
Yeah, yeah. Because, I mean, firstly, they have to prove that this is not just a retirement era for them or anything. But I think Zlatan took the MLS debut to a whole new level.
He definitely did. I think even before the debut, he took it to a whole new level. He took out a whole page in the LA Times or whatever, you know, signaling his arrival in Los Angeles and just saying, you're welcome, that I'm here, etc. Mm-hmm. You know, the same thing. And in his first interview, he obviously said the, you know, his usual cocky sentences and things like that.
About lions and everything, and you're all going to see I conquered England in 3 months and all that. But, you know, he didn't do that, but we cannot say that as a 35-year-old player at the time when he showed up in England. I mean, he scored 17 league goals, 28 in all competitions. That is a very impressive haul of goals for someone of that age.
He, and in that league, and with those expectations on his shoulder. Yeah. To be fair to him, at 35, he did extremely well. And if it wasn't for the injury, I think he'd be playing still at United right now.
Yeah.
Also, the thing with Zlatan too is that we can't forget that other people have tried doing this at the... Not even close to the prime of their career. You think of Shevchenko coming to Chelsea. You think of examples like that, and they failed.
Yeah.
But Zlatan did relatively well at United, and we always thought he would.
Yeah.
But he always seems to, you know, follow through with his big words, and he did it again in his debut. I think LAFC went 3-0 up.
Yeah.
Which was insane. Carlos Vela scoring two goals. Two beautiful goals.
We forget that Vela did that.
Yes.
And Vela's a big-time player in MLS.
Exactly. And we forget his two brilliant goals because of what happened afterwards. But he scored two really good goals. He scored a third. And it looked like it was cruising. The first, what they call El Trafico, which is hilarious. And then, 20 minutes to go, Zlatan comes on. He scores the third and the fourth. The third was... I mean, when I saw the replay, I couldn't believe that this actually had happened.
It was sensational. In, you know, it's one of those goals where people like to say, MLS is not even championship level. It doesn't matter what level you're in.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter if you're playing on a park with
that's the same goal
players.
Anywhere.
It's exactly. Like, it's a wonderful goal. The technique in itself to hit that way. And he didn't even think about it. He just knew, I'm going to hit this now. He already knew where the keeper was.
Yeah.
If you watch the highlights, see the keeper come out. I thought about it, and I was because right when they said, oh my God, look what Zlatan did.
Yeah.
When I first saw where the keeper was, I said, he did not. He's not going to lob this guy. He's
yeah.
not going to do it. And then he did it. It was even better when he did it.
No, agreed. And the view that I love was the view from behind the goal where you see how that ball curves. He hits across the ball, and it just curls right over the keeper. And brilliant technique. But that also comes from that confidence. Not a lot of people take the shot there. Not their first shot on target in a new team, in a new league. So, you know, that's the Zlatan effect, I guess. So he did that. And then, just before the game ended, 90-something minute, him and Ashley Cole. I mean...
2005 everyone, we need to go back to 2005.
Exactly.
For this.
These are highlights from 2005. Ashley Cole with a really, really good cross. He was captain for the for the Galaxy. And he, towards the end of the game, got pushed forward as kind of a winger, less so of a left back. And he delivered a really, really good cross to Zlatan, who headed it. You know, was brave to go in there, was in the right spot, as usual, as he always is, and he won the game 4-3. And he just can't write it.
Yeah. It was funny after the game, they asked him about the goal, and why he decided to hit it from there. And he didn't talk about the goalkeeper. He basically said something along the lines of, I was really tired playing for that running, and I was like, I can't run it anymore. I'm just going to hit this. And, you know, it was just such a Zlatan moment. Yeah. And
it encapsulates who he is.
Yeah.
And now we're talking about it, yeah, which is basically the whole point of the signing, is to get more people talking about MLS, talking about LA Galaxy, etc., etc. And here we are, spending the first 5 minutes of this podcast talking about it. And that's basically the goal. And the highlight reel of that game, every guy that watches European football has watched the highlights of that game.
Yep.
People have watched MLS highlights for the first time because of Zlatan. And that's really what they're after.
It does, and to bring a little bit of a TFC effect, it does remind me of, I remember monitoring Twitter when Jovinko scored that goal against Red Bulls.
Yeah.
I think it was either in the playoffs or to take TFC to the playoffs when he dribbled four guys and all yeah. that. And I remember, I'm going to call it European football Twitter, being like, what just happened?
Yeah.
What are we seeing? Because again, it's one of those goals where it doesn't matter where you're playing.
Yeah.
It's a class goal. It's a class goal and everyone's going to talk about it.
That's true. Speaking of TFC, they did win 3-1 this weekend. I think breaking a two-game losing streak. So that was about time. I think with TFC, what we're seeing in the early parts of the season, it's really all about the CONCACAF at this point. Yeah. And it is the most exciting, to be fair. As MLS Cup champions, etc., you want to see how far they can go. And I'm just excited that if they win it, which is great to obviously win the trophy and the cup, but I just want to see them in the Club World Cup. I want to see them go up against whoever wins the Champions League this season.
Yeah.
And that would be fun. So, you know what? I don't blame them for making that a priority at this point, because Alex would remind you, MLS is forgiving.
Yeah.
And you just need to be, top 8. You're not going to lose out on playoff spots by losing your first 3-4 games. You're going to be fine.
And even then, I feel like, because it's such a long season, so many games to play, the first 2 games they lose, whatever, they'll probably still end up top 2. And I think that still gets a bye in the Eastern Conference, at least. So I'm not too worried about that from a TFC perspective, and I agree. I don't even care about MLS right now. I really just want to see how they do in the CONCACAF Champions League. And I think they beat Tigres in the last round. But they were not favorites to do that.
No.
They were not favorites at all. Tigres' team is still better than theirs if you look at it man for man. And look what they pulled off
there. Experience as well.
Yeah, now they're going to the Azteca. So I'm excited to see what that looks
like. Just playing there for those players must be insane. Because, I mean, as a young football player, especially in North America, if you're focused on the US, Canada, and Mexico, the Azteca is kind of where you definitely want to play.
Yeah.
So that I mean, I wish I could go.
We may have to look into that.
We should. I think that's enough MLS. Let's move on to the Premier League.
Yeah.
So I think the biggest game this weekend was definitely the London Derby between Chelsea and Spurs. This one was, we have our little prediction league on the website, and I was thinking, which way is this going to go? And I know Chelsea weren't in the best run of form and Spurs looked good, etc. But I still went for a draw, which was not correct. Chelsea started the game playing not bad. Kind of held the ball a little bit. Willian was buzzing as usual. He's been their best player for a while.
Mm-hmm.
He started off the attack that got him the first goal, sent it out wide to Moses, who then put in quite a good cross for Morata, who again has slowly come back to scoring. But how do you feel about Lloris's performance in that goal? Because I know Alex was talking about how maybe it's not completely his fault, but I don't know, I thought he was lacking a little bit.
I think his starting position was pretty much off.
Yeah.
He probably could have done better. I do think it was a decent area for him to claim it, but I don't know. Morata is a good header of the ball. He knows how to use his body against position.
Right.
So I'm not going to blame him that much for this. But I do think he could have done better with that.
I also thought this is obviously, doesn't work like that. But the way Morata headered it in, Lloris wasn't going to save that regardless.
Mm-hmm.
So if Lloris didn't come out, and you assume he should have played on his line, let's say, he would not have saved that. The header was perfect, inch perfect into the corner. Very good header from Morata.
I do want to kind of talk about Morata a little bit.
Sure.
Before we go on to the rest of the game. He's been a bit of a problem player, as you know, there's been a lot of articles written, a lot of debate, there's all this Lukaku, Lacazette, Morata tracker that everyone's done and all that. But he doesn't seem to me like someone that leads the line. And You know, people talk about hold up play, all that. I'm talking about, like, literally lead from the front.
Right.
Even in this game, he scored, but there were so many times where I thought he was out-muscled, he was outpaced, and he didn't seem to have the cohesion. No, earlier in the season, people said, oh, Morata and Hazard have an understanding. I haven't seen that for months, right. And I'm trying to understand where that issue is coming from.
I agree with you when you say he doesn't seem to lead from the front, and I was going to touch upon it later, but you brought it up now. The third Spurs goal, Dier played, or the second one, Dier played that long ball to Ali. Mm-hmm. If he watched the replay again, Morata was the one that should have been pressing Dier
right. Much
more to not give him that. He looked up, he took a touch, he looked up again, he took another touch. And this was kind of a between, you know, in Spurs' kind of first third of the field.
Mm-hmm.
Morata was walking towards Dier, not enough energy, not enough. Can I just get there and put him under pressure? Don't allow him to play that long ball. And
right.
I thought he was a bit lacking when it came to that. So I agree with you in that sense. And the thing with Morata is, do we put too much expectation on his shoulders? I mean, his experience isn't there.
Right.
He's not as experienced as a Lukaku, who just scored 100 goals and he's only like 24
right.
in the Premier League,
right.
playing for teams like Everton and West Brom.
Mm-hmm.
Morata played what? A few games here and there as a starter for some teams, sometimes for Madrid, sometimes for Juve.
Mm-hmm.
He never really established himself in any of these teams as the definite first choice.
Right.
Long term.
And there was likely a reason for that. And I don't know. I mean, he was young when he was at those teams. I get that. I guess my issue is there are players that we can look at on other teams and I can say, oh, you know, this manager isn't the right type of manager for them.
Right.
You know, this manager doesn't know how to develop young talent. And he's 24, so sure, he's a man, but you kind of still put them into that bracket. And
he's 24 with an experience of like a 21-year-old. He hasn't played enough.
Yeah. Is he going to be a late bloomer by the time he's 27? We're going to see the real Morata? Or, you know, you would think Conte was the perfect manager to bring him on. But is that even the case anymore?
So think of it relatively. By the end of his career, is he going to have a better one than, let's say, a player of a similar mold in Dzeko?
Oof.
Yeah, but Dzeko isn't a world beater by any means, but at the same time, consistent. A lot of goals. Look at his record for Rome. You know, is he going to be better than Dzeko? In the history books, will kids remember Morata more than Dzeko? I don't know.
So, only because we specifically mentioned Edin Dzeko, we have to say that Edin Dzeko, and people actually forget this,
was
the best striker in Germany when he was at, I think it was Bremen, actually, not Wolfsburg. I think it was Werder Bremen, and they won the league.
And one season he was the best striker in the Premier League when he was playing, I think it was like behind Negredo or whatever that season.
Mm-hmm.
And then he was best striker in Italy.
Yeah.
So he's definitely underrated. But I'm just saying, when I think of Morata, that's the minimum Morata, I'm sure, wants to aim for is being better than a Dzeko.
Right, that kind of level.
Yeah, so will he though?
I'm not sure. And what's interesting, to bring this back to the game in and of itself, is I'd also predicted that, I think I predicted Chelsea win this time.
Right.
And my thought process was, there is no Harry Kane, and they're going to have a hard time breaking down that block with N'Golo Kante sitting in behind that defense. But they were an absolute shambles. And the funny thing was, N'Golo Kante did all right.
Yep.
And the rest of them were just a complete shambles.
So N'Golo Kante was the one that kind of was trying to press on Eriksen before he took that shot. But again, he was blocking the passing route. He was looking at Eriksen going, he's definitely way too far. So I can't really blame him for not closing him down faster. But that goal in the 45th minute,
what a hit.
That one was a game changer.
Yeah.
That was the game winner. I know it took you to 1-1, but to me, that was the game winner.
Mm-hmm.
Out of nowhere, Chelsea could have gone into halftime, 1-0, Conte could have done his thing, whatever, maybe tried to close it down. Eriksen with that hit, Caballero, again, he's not the best of keepers. I know it dips and it swerves, but it was so central that I just feel he wasn't even close.
Yeah.
He, not even an arm went up, which, I don't know. I just felt
he definitely doesn't have the reflexes of a top keeper, to me.
Right.
Caballero. There's a reason why he is who he is. But I don't want to take anything away from Eriksen.
Mm-hmm.
It was a hell of a hit. And the way he went through it with the laces, like, it was always going to create that spin and that dip.
That knuckleball effect.
Yeah.
He did that intentionally. You could see it in the way
and
he kicked
it. And it was beautiful. But like you said, right on the stroke of halftime to score that goal. And at that point, I did think that Chelsea in the first half were better than Tottenham. Tottenham didn't really get any real good spell of possession going for long amounts of time.
Mm-hmm.
And then the second half, I just don't understand.
Well, I think people, at least Spurs fans, would like to hear that basically Dele Alli just stepped up. He just decided to have a good second half. He played much better than he did in the first half. In just that moment of that goal was brilliant.
Yes.
That touch to kill, I mean, there's a lot of mistakes from Chelsea's side for that goal. First of all, Azpilicueta kind of pushes him off to, who was it, Kale Christensen. Yeah. He pushed him to him, and we all thought, well, that ball's coming, again, like we said, Morata didn't pressure Dier enough. Dier with a brilliant ball. Mm-hmm. Okay. But that first touch from Ali, because you're thinking, by the time he takes a touch, stumbles a little bit, I'll be there, everything will be fine.
Yeah.
But he just killed it. Like, I think it's one of those where even him went, whoa, this went better than I thought it was going to go. And then the finish kind of in the near post of Caballero, off the post and in, that was a brilliant goal. Yeah. It was almost as good as Damara's to Vardy. Similar caliber, similar style. And then from then on, a minute later, they scored the third.
The third was a shambles of defending.
Yeah, but Chelsea just collapsed out of nowhere. And, you know, this brings us to the point of Conte. Is this Conte's last few months as Chelsea manager?
I feel like it almost has to be. I saw someone tweet about, you know, journalists defending Conte when they're slagging off Mourinho and all that. And I'm the biggest Mourinho hater in the world.
Right.
But I cannot understand why Conte doesn't get more abuse. Let me just use that word.
Unfortunately, it's character. It has nothing to do with coaching. It's just Mourinho is unlikable. That specific topic came up in the same way that what is the difference between Conte this season and Mourinho's negative season where he got sacked by Chelsea? People were saying the biggest difference is players aren't pushing Conte out the door.
Mm-hmm.
That's the difference. Mourinho, they were pushing him out of the door. They were done with him as a man,
as a manager. That makes it even worse. Because if you say that player power and the players aren't listening to you, you've failed as a manager to secure the locker room. That's fine. That's still on Mourinho. But still, the players have to hold themselves accountable for that. Right. That's one. But when you're Conte, and for all intents and purposes, people kind of like this guy, and he still can't get them to play football like the way they did. Again, that was a rampaging team last year. Now look what they're doing. He's doing something wrong tactically.
The problem is a lot of people say they're unsure how many of the signings are actually his signings. People are doubting the Morata signing. I know you always touch on the point that it was his fault that Costa isn't here. He should have handled that much better. Costa is a world-class striker by every mean, and he would have transformed this team. If he was still here. Bakayoko looks like a bad signing. David Luiz taking him out of the team. Cahill. There's a lot on Conte from just choices he's made. And that's why it's hard to kind of say, well, it's not his fault. But we can still agree that he's failing or has failed the season without having to sack him. As in, he can still make amends himself. It doesn't have to be a new guy. That's my only thing. Maybe give him another season.
I think there are two ways to look at it. And one is, if you're Chelsea, you have to ask yourselves, we keep going up and down, up and down, up and down.
Right.
Should we actually stick with it for once? I know they have standards, and that's a great thing. We talk about that in relation to Arsenal and all that. But maybe you've gone through all the managers you can in the world.
Yeah, keep one.
You know, for a while. Just try it. Maybe he didn't do well. Try it and let him do it his way. If that fails, then fine.
When was the last time Chelsea had a manager for more than two seasons?
I can't tell you. I don't know the answer to
that. It's crazy.
I think Mourinho lasted three the last round. Well, two and a half. Well,
yeah.
Like, really.
Yeah.
Right?
Two. Yeah. Yeah. It's... Anyways, I don't know what they're going to do, but Conte, if he does leave, he has a lot of people that would hire him for sure. I mean, Juve, we're talking about it because Allegri's definitely leaving. Mm-hmm. The Italian national team, etc., etc. So
on the flip side, there are a lot of people who are... Let me put it this way. They feel vindicated as far as being on the Pochettino train.
Right.
Because he beat Chelsea and yada, yada, yada. And
he secured fourth, which is...
Pretty much, yeah. He secured fourth. We've gone through this. My take is fourth, if you're Pochettino, it sounds great. But I still think that to get the level of adulation you're getting in the media, you need to do better. That's just me. People can disagree, but there are a lot of people I saw coming out saying he's the best in the league. I'm like, what? The best in the league is a guy who's winning. So Guardiola. I don't understand.
Again, relatively speaking, people like to say that Pochettino is better than Klopp. Let's say, okay, whether you agree or not, let's just say that is an argument.
Mm-hmm.
Now, who? So you have a better manager. Spurs has a better manager than Liverpool.
Mm-hmm.
They have just as good as a team, if not better, at least in the back and the midfield three. Maybe that Liverpool win a little bit up top,
mm-hmm.
but still, you still got Kane, you still got Eriksen, you still got Dele Alli. It's not that far off, but you've definitely got a much better defense, mm-hmm. much better goalkeeper, mm-hmm. a much better midfield.
Mm-hmm.
So, why are Liverpool better than you? Why are they still in the Champions League? Why are they above you in the league, etc., etc.?
Right.
So, the question is, yes, Pochettino's been doing great, but then why does Klopp not get the same level of love? What, you know what I mean? Like, it's just that...
I you know, we had this discussion where everyone's talking about expectation and all that, and I'm definitely on that boat. The funny thing about Spurs is because the media coverage has been so positive for them, I can't remember their bad games anymore. It's weird. Only because I'm a United fan, I remember them losing to United at Old Trafford, but I cannot remember the bad games.
Even though
I know there are a lot of them.
They are the media darlings right now. Everyone likes the story of Spurs. Everyone likes the story of Pochettino. So unfortunately, it does get painted in a much positive light. It is positive. I'm not saying it's not, but it does get kind of preferential treatment when it comes to these kind of things.
So the last question I probably should have on Pochettino and Tottenham is, I see a lot in my brain of Unai Emery in this, in that Sevilla were always in the Champions League. Always.
Yep.
Always crashed out the group stage, whatever.
Right.
And then won Europa League. I wonder if Pochettino is a manager in a certain class of that Emery, maybe Tuchel, we'll see how he does in his next job, of you're all right up to a point.
Right.
But if you ask that type of manager to handle a superstar, you know, to handle a Neymar, even to go to United and handle a Pogba or, mm-hmm. or Alexis... can he handle that player? I'm not sure he even wants to.
Okay, so let's say he who was going to be put to the test. Where could he realistically go? If he decides to take that step up, because, you know, no offense, he needs a step up if he's going to prove to be the best. Tottenham ain't going to do it. Just like Harry Kane, Tottenham ain't going to do it. Just like Dele Alli, Tottenham ain't going to do it. Eventually, Tottenham is a stepping stone, whether for the manager or for the players. Now, where?
I think in the Premier League, the only team that could work... is Manchester United.
But you're not...
But that is only if Ed Woodward decides to lay off this policy of Galacticos. If it was in the Ferguson mold of United, it would work perfectly. Because that's kind of Ferguson's thing.
I think if he came after Ferguson with all the young players you had and the way he kind of likes to nurture them, and I think that would have been a brilliant sign.
I think right now, everything would have been very good.
Yeah. Anyways, we'll see what he does. And his struggle, I think, this summer, if not next summer, is keeping these players here without trophies. Because they're not going to win anything this season. Maybe an FA Cup. But other than that, nothing.
I think first FA round Cup is enough.
I think so too. But I don't know if the players will think.
I think Harry Kane will. If Harry Kane stays, the rest of them stay. I think Harry Kane's probably going to stay at least another 2 years.
But if Madrid sell a Bale and then decide that they're done with Benzema and they go, here's $150 million for Kane, and Kane's like, I want to go...
He just doesn't seem to me as the type of person that will want to leave.
We'll see.
Maybe it's the English thing. I don't know.
Maybe. Everton-Manchester City. So this one, Everton came in here with a great record.
Really?
They did.
Against who?
Against City.
Against City? Oh, yeah. Okay.
Never lost to City or whatever at home, etc. Whatever. Some random record that people somehow thought they were going to hold on to, which was extremely unrealistic. City started this game... like they were in a training match.
Mm-hmm.
Silva at 3900-year-old Silva was running around midfield looking as light as a butterfly.
Mate, he was having so much fun.
He was enjoying himself.
Oh my goodness.
And you could see every touch, every pass. He was, again, training ground stuff. The first goal...
By the way, did you notice that he was just shooting from wherever he wanted to?
Yep.
And... it was because he knew we're going to get more. Even if I score, we'll get more chances. We're good.
100%.
He was not concerned.
100%. He did that 1-2, took that ball into his stride, lofted it beautifully to Sané, who, again, even just 5 minutes in, was killing this game down the left-hand side. And I know you love this thing he does where he hugs that touchline. The ball could be all the way at right back at whoever plays there now, Walker.
Mm-hmm.
And he is hugging the touchline. However many meters, he doesn't care about that ball. He's like, once it gets over here, I'm stretching this defense so much.
It's just so... you know when something... the thing about Man City to me is people talk about the complexity of Pep Guardiola and how they play. And maybe there is a lot of complexity that goes in the background that we're not aware of, whatever. When you actually look at the product on the pitch, it's pretty much spread the play as wide as you can.
Yeah.
Give our central midfielders enough space and time to pass into Roam, and then pass and move. But everything they teach you in school.
Yeah.
Pass and move. Now, it's complex, but it looks so simple when you actually watch it on the pitch, which is a testament to the coaching.
Because he drills it into their head so much that this is just like breathing and eating and sleeping. This is something now they do without thinking.
Mm-hmm.
So the commentator, I think, or someone was analyzing the game and saying, look at how wide Sterling and Sonny are pulling these players. But that puts so much also responsibility on the center midfielders to not lose the ball.
Mm-hmm.
Because if a Silva or a Fernandinho loses it deep, that's it.
Mm-hmm.
There's literally no one to track back. So that puts so much... And they do it so well. And again, De Bruyne is a brilliant player. And he's great. He's creative. He's amazing, etc., etc. I don't think he deserves to win the PFA Player of the Year, whatever. I just think Silva has almost had a better season. Like, at least equal season. He's been phenomenal for City. So, so important. He's also starting to chip in with goals. I did not think Silva was going to score this many goals this season.
Yep.
He's scoring goals. He's giving assists. We thought he's going to be deep-lying playmaker, you know, taking it easy at this old age. He's dominating. He was just the metronome this game. He was everywhere. He's almost box-to-box at this age, which is insane. And I just enjoy watching Silva so, so much. One of the best players to ever play in the Premier League.
I think that's fair. I think that's... We forget, actually, how long he's been playing.
Yep.
I think he's been there since 08 or 09 or something, almost 10 years now. That you've definitely reached a status where we can say you're one of the best to ever do it.
I feel him and Aguero don't get enough love in terms of the best to ever play in the league. I don't know why. They just don't get that same... Like, people always go back to Henry and Cantona. No one ever says Aguero. Like, Suarez sometimes gets more love as a Premier League player. I don't know why. Is it a City thing?
I think it might be a City thing. But I think... Well, yes, I will say that. It's a City thing. Because even when we talk about Silva, you just have to make that point. I never thought about it before.
Right.
I believe it's actually true that he's one of the best to ever do it in the Premier League, but I never thought about it until today.
Yeah.
And I think it's a City thing just because if you look at Paul Scholes, Ryan Giggs, Thierry Henry, Bergkamp, they have done things that you can hold on to.
Yeah.
Now, Aguero has Aguero, and I think in City's terms, he is that guy. But... If in 5 years, people might struggle to remember David Silva because they don't have that thing where you go, remember when Ryan Giggs did that? Remember when Thierry Henry did that? Like, I don't know. I feel like City, they've won leagues, but you've won leagues where they've kind of sleptwalked through it at times.
Yes. I think, as you said that, what came to my mind was that this rivalry thing. They don't have... this rivalry struggle period.
Mm-hmm.
As in, Arsenal had United, United had Arsenal. Liverpool had United, United had Liverpool.
Mm.
There was this big struggle at the top. Two big guys. Two big guys constantly batting it out. Roy Keane, Vieira, etc., etc. City played in a league that was more... where the kind of competition was more equally spread out.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not saying it's easier,
mm-hmm.
but there was less that narrative. Mm-hmm. There wasn't a hardcore narrative to cling on to. It was more like City are great. This season they're walking it. They're going to win the league sooner than anyone has ever done in the history of the Premier League.
Mm-hmm.
Even the Aguero moment, they were winning the league so easily and they kind of just faltered towards the end and had to pick it.
Well, actually, they took it from United, who were 5 points up with 4 games to go.
Right. So I just feel like the narrative isn't as strong, or maybe it's just not... in history enough. Maybe I'm way too old. Maybe younger kids are thinking Aguero, oh my god, what a legend. I don't know.
I think and this is a great discussion. I think part of it is they were done a disservice, in my opinion, when Ferguson retired.
Right.
I think Manchester City need Manchester United. This is to me the beginning of the legend of Manchester City.
Right.
Because you have Mourinho coming in second, and though it's by 16 points, it's the Pep and Mourinho thing. Because when Man United, I think when Ferguson retired, I think City won the league. No one cared.
Right.
And then someone else won.
Chelsea won, yeah.
And then Leicester won. And it's kind of like you didn't feel that was such a great Man City team. But Arsenal produced great teams.
Yeah.
Man United produced great teams. Even Mourinho's Chelsea produced Drogba, and we still talk about guys.
So is this team, this season... are they going to be talked in the same breath as United 99, Arsenal 04, Chelsea whatever it was, 11 or 12 or whatever it was? Are the people going to say City 18?
I think they will. I think if not this year, I think that this Pep Guardiola Man City era will be talked about in that sense, because I think they'll win the league this year.
Wait, they'll win at Old Trafford?
Probably.
Yeah. I'm just saying, because that now mathematically...
No, it's at Etihad. We already did.
At least you're going to lose away from home.
I think I don't see us winning this game.
At least it's not at Old Trafford.
I think it might be a draw, but whatever. I don't see a win for United.
At least there isn't that whatever thing called...
the Guard of Honor?
The Guard of Honor. At least that's not happening.
We already did that to you.
Okay. It's okay. We won the league at White Hart Lane, that's what I...
8-2. I enjoy this Arsenal United thing more. For the rest of my life. I really don't.
But I also do think, because our prime of like kind of being so engulfed in the Premier League was during then, I think kids now are going to think of the Pep Guardiola era of Man City and their dominance in a few years as how we look back at the 04s of Arsenal, the 99s of United, etc. And, you know, you had your Tevez, Ronaldo, Rooney period, like 08, 09, 010. Like,
you know what's interesting? And it could lead to a good segue. We'll see. Whatever. But
try.
This Liverpool-Man City Champions League quarterfinal tie, to me, this sets up a rivalry that we might enjoy for some years.
Yes.
I think United will probably still finish second next season anyway. Because Liverpool, under Klopp, to me, will always be inconsistent. Yeah. Tottenham will be whatever. And Chelsea, who knows what they're going to be. Arsenal, forget it.
With Allegri. Allegri's coming in, no?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
But like the more interesting game is Man City-Liverpool.
Well,
the only team that can really beat, and we've seen it this year, are Liverpool. So I think we might be being set up for an interesting rivalry for the next
game. I mean, if you have to pick only one fixture to watch all season, I think you pick Liverpool City.
Yes.
That's the one you pick.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay. So your segue is probably to Liverpool.
Sure. Yeah.
Okay. So Christian Bull almost happened again. We're so close. Crystal Palace opening the scoring with a penalty. They've been getting so many penalties this year. Milijojevic. Whatever. It's hard.
I thought you were trying Millie Rock and rap at the same time.
I ain't got time for Lingard. he scored his penalty. He's been scoring a lot of points.
Best in the league, eh?
Yeah, a little advice to just put him in your fantasy. He just scores penalties even when they lose.
Mm-hmm.
And then Benteke went on to miss 3, 4, 5 or so open chances.
Match fixing. It's his old club. He doesn't want to let them down. This is what that is.
And he just doesn't seem to be able to kick a ball with his feet anymore for the amount of wages he's on, for the price that they paid for him. Crystal Palace lost their chance here too. And I feel so bad for Roy Hodgson. He seems to set up his team perfectly. They always have a plan. They play so well. And then he always, at the end of the game, has his head in his hands. Because it's like he can't help but, like, we planned for this and you guys failed me.
It's like, if you look at the last few games, it was the last, most recent one was United 3-2.
Mm-hmm.
No business losing that game. And they played so well up until the three goals went, the last 15 minutes or so. Tottenham, I think they were going to get a draw.
Yeah.
And then Harry Kane, terrible goalkeeping. But again, unlucky. This game, realistically, they should not be in the relegation dogfight anymore. We should be talking about Roy Hodgson doing a miraculous job.
To be fair.
But it's just not fair.
When you come in with a team that haven't scored a goal in 8 games, anything you do, literally, you could resign in a day and you've still done better. We'll talk about managers getting sacked once we get to our nice game. But Sadio Mane is scoring. He scored a goal. He's been on and off. He's definitely didn't reach the heights of Firmino and Salah this season. He's kind of been the one that's... If someone is letting them down the front three, it's definitely him this season. But he has started to pick it up slowly. James Milner with the assist. And he has scored as many goals as Coutinho has ever scored in a season.
Who?
Sadio Mane?
Oh, okay, yeah.
And, you know, so people, Liverpool fans are like, well, you said Coutinho this, and Sadio Mane apparently is having a horrendous season, blah, blah, blah.
Coutinho does
more than goals.
Yeah, yeah. I saw a tweet and I thought, the world is ending.
I know.
Just because if you go by Twitter, you would think that everyone's garbage.
For sure. Everybody can be bad and everybody can be good. But then, obviously, if you had to put your house on who was going to score the second goal, I mean, it was going to be nobody but Salah. It just had to be. Like it's written in the stars. He scored a goal against Portugal in the international break. Mm-hmm. Brilliant goal to almost, and then Ronaldo beasted that game in the end. And then this game, that looks like a simple goal. But the first touch with the right to bring it perfect. I mean, he could have panicked. He could have hit it first touch. Anything could have happened. Because realistically, he should have thought the defender was going to get it. So to keep that composure and kind of that option that he might miss it and come to him, he had to be composed. And then the right foot finish, brilliant on his weaker foot. He's just having...
Do you notice that there was that split-second hesitation before he shot it?
Yes.
To take the goalkeeper right. the other way?
Keeper fell.
It was beautiful. And then, what's his name? Sako. He actually dove for it. He used his hand. He actually went for it with his hands. He was so desperate not to repeat all this rubbish.
Salah just seems to have where every game ends with a photo of a defender, like, on the ground, just spread eagle, not knowing what to do with Salah. But, yeah, it was brilliant.
He is so good right now that Egyptians are penciling him in for the vote for president. That's how good. He could walk into Egypt right now and win the election.
Claim the throne.
That's how good the man is.
Claim the throne. Oh, definitely. It's hysterical in Egypt right now following Salah. And they're so excited for the World Cup. And again, he is the sole reason. I know there's 10 players on the field. Literally, Bernie. The sole reason we have made the World Cup after 26 barren years of not making it. He scored something like 15 of our like 18 qualifying goals. Like, no way.
You know what's interesting about this Salah story is it literally will never get better than this.
No.
In that he scored the winning goal to get his country into the World Cup after almost 30 years.
Yeah.
He's probably going to do amazing in the World Cup.
Win the PFA
He's
going to
break a Premier League goal score. I'm convinced he will break the record. Mm-hmm. He'll be Player of the Year. He's
booking every African record in the Premier League.
Exactly. They voted him in as basically, they want him to be and then to top it off, he probably gets a move to the biggest team in the world or whatever.
When they sell
at
Bale,
that
yeah.
point, if I'm Mo Salah, I retire. I'm sorry, I'm done. I have achieved max level. I can't upgrade from here.
If people have listened to our latest podcast, we were talking about how Klopp jokingly compared him to Messi or didn't compare him to Messi or whatever. Mm-hmm. And we said, if he goes on to win the World Cup for Egypt, he is better than Messi. Oh. It's over.
Mate, I will say it from now to Kingdom Come. If that were to happen, I don't want to hear the name Lionel Messi ever again.
GOAT. Greatest of all time. Done. What else happened here? United beat Swansea 2-0. This one was... Is it 2-0? Yeah, 2-0. Yeah. I predicted, I think, 2 or 3. Swansea, as good as they've been, I think United were just always going to have too much for them. Carvajal and Mourinho have this bromance going on.
Yeah, like this thing about helping usher in the new era of Portuguese managers, which I guess is true, right. If you think about it. Sure. I thought this was a game of two halves.
Like, it was, yeah.
The first half, it was weird because if you go on United Twitter, and like that's how I gauge a lot to see, am I making sense here in my thoughts? And I look at it and I'm like, are we playing well? Are we creating chances? What's going on here? I literally haven't seen this since 2018.
Right.
Since January 1st, 2018, I have not seen United create chances consistently in a game. And I saw this happen and I thought, what is happening here? This is so weird.
I think Lingard was quite at the forefront of a lot of these chances. He was playing almost number 10. Mata wide for Lingard, right?
Yeah, they've been doing that a lot.
Yeah, exactly. And Lingard has, to be fair, earned it. He played really well for England in the international break. He played very well, at least in the first half, as that number 10. His assist to Sanchez was brilliant.
Mm-hmm.
And Lingard, all the jokes aside and the stupid dancing that he does with being in the limelight, etc., etc., is actually not a bad player. Again, I like to compare, because if everything is relative, it puts things in perspective. Theo Walcott.
Mm-hmm.
Lingard is a better player than Theo Walcott.
Yes.
And he's only been playing for like a year and a half. So he's good enough to be at least admired and said, you know, he's a good player. Yes, people don't like his little antics. I hate them too. But he's a good player. He starts when Mourinho can.
I think if we see his trajectory, I mean, for Alex Ferguson, before he left, said that Lingard would be a United regular in 5 years.
Right, he's better than Ox.
That has actually happened since he left. Van Gaal brought him into the team and because he saw what he could do. So it's a kind of thing where people cannot
They
cannot deny the work rate and the talent that someone has, and now it's manifesting and he's doing great stuff.
Right.
And I'm really, really happy about that.
Yeah. Lukaku played very well this game. He wanted it. And we've talked about that, I think, 2 or 3 podcasts ago about that leadership is showing. He's really kind of pulling this team through.
Mm-hmm.
Even when he's not getting the service he wants, even when Alexis Sanchez is hitting balls into Rosie, he still goes. He keeps going. He doesn't put his head down, and he just produces, and his stats just scored his 100th league goal in his career at 24.
Yep.
He should, Alan Shearer is at 250 something. I mean,
yeah, 249 or something.
Yeah,
like
it's not impossible if he keeps this up. It's definitely not impossible.
No, for him and Kane could do some serious
damage. I don't think Kane's going to stay in the league.
Right.
But that's why I think Lukaku has a better chance.
Mm.
But Lukaku, imagine top of the Premier League scoring records in 8 years, is Romelu Lukaku. That would be insane.
The thing I love about Romelu Lukaku is, and this game was not, I mean, he was great. It was not perfect. It was great. But people, you notice when the first half of the season he was scoring, well, the first 3 months or whatever, scoring so many goals, and he went through that lean patch.
Patch, yeah.
And everyone was talking about Lukaku's first touch.
Right.
Everybody.
Yeah.
And no one wants to admit it. But he has worked on that, and his first touch is a lot better.
And he's also one of the best crossers of the ball in the league, yes. Which is crazy.
Yes.
For that big of a guy, he cuts in on his left, and his cross is so nice.
It's that in-swinging cross from the left into the
ball
middle.
Ball is spinning.
It's the exact way you want it as a striker. But the thing I love about him is people said, oh, he's for a big man, he's too weak. For this, he's... And it's as if he heard it.
Right.
And
he bullied Lovren.
He bullied Lovren. He holds up the ball. You can't get it away from him. He brings people into play. I'm like, am I watching someone who's listening to criticism and working on his game and adapting to his game? I feel like in a year, this guy could be seriously dangerous.
I think so. And I think Mourinho really likes him. I think Mourinho plays him as much as he can. There's a lot of games earlier on where I thought, why is Lukaku not being rested? He's played a lot. This is an easy game, or there's a Champions League game. Mourinho loves playing Lukaku, and he realizes just how important Lukaku is to this team. He is the focal point that they use him to bounce balls off. He scores goals, he assists, he's been very good. I have to give him
I want to talk about someone that Mourinho doesn't like.
Mm.
And although they both come out and said, we're cool, and they did that, in my opinion, fake
the
handshake,
Trump handshake,
whatever.
Yeah.
Paul Pogba. I'll say this about Pogba. I defend Pogba when he plays well, and I have no problem slagging him off when he plays badly. But in this game, to me, it's no coincidence that in the first half, United were actually creating a lot of chances and look more fluid when Pogba was actually up for it.
Next to Matic, right? Kind of box to box.
Yeah. Which is interesting because, and here's the flip side of this Pogba discussion. People like me, myself, have said he needs to play in a three on the left. But I said on the last pod when you weren't here, the first half of the season, Pogba was great. Right. No one had any problem with Paul Pogba. He was leading the assists higher than De Bruyne. United fans making a lot of noise.
All the dabs were coming out.
He was playing in a two.
Yeah.
So part of it, yes, is Mourinho, but part of it also, you have to say, is Paul Pogba. But in this game, you know, Paul Pogba was denied two assists. Right. Lukaku, or I think it was even, not Lukaku's
Mata.
Fault, the keeper with an amazing save. And Mata, by...
It's tough. It
was tough.
Yeah.
He probably should have scored. And I thought... Second half, he dipped.
Right.
But I thought
everybody did.
Yeah. I mean, he played a very good game. And I feel like people are on his case a lot.
Yes,
and,
I agree.
And I'm like, is it necessary?
I agree. He gets more criticism. It's kind of that Ozil camp. He gets more criticism than everyone else. But he demands the attention. And when you personally demand attention, you have to live with the consequences of when it's negative.
Right.
It can't always be possible. So when I go around... being the guy that I want everyone to talk about, then I better give them something positive to say.
Right.
Or else then it's, you know, it can't always be positive. And if you're going to hide, but that's what big players do.
Right.
They want to be in the limelight all the time, etc.
So you have to own it.
You have to own it. And that's what we're waiting for. No one's saying Pogba isn't a good footballer.
Right.
It's just that consistency and owning, which is why when we talk during the game about the second half, you're like, well, everybody's playing bad. Yes, but as a 90 million most expensive, blah, 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 once a...
And that's the same thing,
up.
Like you said.
Yes.
People say that
same
about
Ozil.
Ozil, same thing. They go, he's on the bad team, whatever.
I don't care. You step up and you grab the game.
I agree. And the thing I do find interesting about United and why this game to me was completely different and an opposite was you have seen since Alexis Sanchez came to United, by the way, this is not to say that they were challenging for the title. That was not true. But the level of play of United since 2018 started has been dramatically different. I think everyone can agree on that. Players like Martial was having the season of his life. It was literally, statistically, the season of his life.
Then he got benched.
Alexis Sanchez comes in, plays on the left, and everything went to hell.
But Sanchez was man of the match.
And this is what I was going to say.
Assist and
a
goal.
Actually very good today. Over the weekend. He was very, very good. I was very impressed
Great
by
finish.
Alexis Sanchez.
Great finish.
And he didn't clog Lingard in the middle as much as he probably wanted to.
Right. I mean, people were saying Zlatan leaving, he was his best friend, blah, blah, blah. And you can have all these random, like, he's just a footballer. He's not playing very well. He'll get his form back. He's almost a world-class player. He'll come back. It's just, once it clicks, it clicks.
And guess what? The best part about this is Sanchez will have preseason.
Yeah,
and there's
for the first time ever
who will have preseason. Oh yeah, if United sell Martial, which will hurt my soul,
right,
and buy Bale, Bale will have a preseason.
True. Bale, Sanchez, Lukaku?
30, looks like 30.
definitely really 30. All right, let's move on to Arsenal. Arsenal versus Stoke here. This had, from an Arsenal perspective, had the different little scenario going on, which is Arsenal fans just wanted to make sure we beat Stoke. What's going on out there? Yes, a lot of sirens.
I think it's the police. They found Ozil.
Arsenal fans just wanted to make sure that we did our part in trying to relegate Stoke.
Literally, that's a public service.
This was the storyline behind this game. Mm-hmm. We're not going to do anything better than the sixth. We're done here. Everyone gets it. Europa League is the aim. But please help relegate Stoke. Mm-hmm. So this was literally the aim. The game started and Aubameyang started up top. We rested a lot of players for the Europa League, which is coming on Thursday.
Who are you playing again?
Moscow. Cheska.
Okay, you're going through.
We'll see. I think we'll win at home, but away we never win.
You will score, though, because I can fave can't keep a clean sheet.
That is true.
So you get an away goal and then you go through.
That is true. We get one away goal. We started the game at 1-0. Rested a lot of players. Played, I think it was Ramsey, Elneny, Wilshere in midfield, and then Aubameyang. Oh, Welbeck. He honestly is not a football player. Like, I cannot stress enough. He had this one volley in the game, which, as he struck it, it's as if he kicked me in the chest. It went so off his foot. It was harder to do that than to get it on target. I was just like, why is this guy playing? He literally... Welbeck has made a career from being away from the limelight, a teacher's pet, and being able to run fast.
You do know that when his career is done, he can point to FA Cups, yes, Premier Leagues,
Manchester United, whatever, Arsenal,
and say, I was a legend at these two clubs.
Yeah.
Like, he can actually say those words with his... He can say it with his chest.
And his grandchildren will believe him, because the record books will say he played all these games for these two top clubs. Anyways, and then on the right we had... Who do we have on the right? Wow. No, actually no clue.
Okay.
Can't remember. Yeah, I know Bellerin was a right back and him and Ozil had lower.
That was funny. Okay. By the way, I was happy with Ozil for that.
Yeah.
Because
everyone started Bellerin.
I said they should throw him in the bin. Like, at this point. Yeah. But it's not just the Bellerin part. Like, for me, and I think sometimes I'm a bit old school in my English... Right. Football,
yeah, like how you like your wing backs to defend.
I want defense to defend. Like, yeah. It's that simple. Yeah. Like, I love a good player that runs up and down the pitch and stays wide, whatever. But with Mesut Ozil, my only beef with him was I always felt he's the player.
Right.
He's the guy.
Yeah.
Drag Arsenal to where you want him to be. Mm-hmm. And sometimes that is with your play on the pitch.
Sometimes that is
yelling at your players and holding them to a standard, and that's exactly what he did to him.
That's a very good point. I was listening to the Ars blog on my way here today, and they were mentioning how recently, since his new contract, he has been showing that side of him a bit more. I think with the new contract and how much faith that kind of the club has put into him by giving him that 400, 350, whatever K a week it is, mm-hmm, and making him, you know, by far the highest paid player of the club and in the history, etc. I think he started to realize kind of his responsibility, like you say, is more than just tallying up his assists or whatever. It's about really dragging this team. And he is one of the few, if not the only, I mean, now Aubameyang is here, but the only world-class player in our squad. Mm-hmm. And he just has that responsibility, whether unfortunately or not for him, it's just the situation that he's in. He's accepted the contract, and this is the situation you're in.
So, on the leadership of Ozil, there's, and to bring it sort of to United kind of mentality is, I was reading Harsh Ferguson's book, Leading, and he was talking about leaders and captains and why he made certain people captains. And he said that he's picked people who are completely different. He had Roy Keane, he had Eric Cantona, and for different purposes. Roy Keane to drag, you know, literally drag you by your collar to perform, and Cantona to inspire you and to lead by example. And I wonder if Arsenal wouldn't get even more out of Ozil if they gave him the captaincy.
Right. I think the captaincy, realistically, would go to Ramsey if they can tie him down to a new team. It's just what it is. Longest serving player now, like starting.
But he's no leader.
Koscielny's going to leave in a year or so.
Do you see Ramsey as a leader of men?
We don't have a leader of men.
But that's what I'm saying. If you give it to Ozil, you have that inspirational, like, he is the best player on
Arsenal. Can I give you a candidate? Like, if you only have to give the candidate, let's say the captaincy for the next few months.
You're going to say Wilshere?
No. Monreal. Monreal
Fair.
Is a leader
Fair.
Without a lot of people noticing. Arsenal fans will not disagree. Not one person will say that Monreal hasn't been one of our best players this season, our most consistent for the last 2-3 years. He's been a leader. He's been dragging this. I think that's a fair one. It's just the Spanish-English bit. He's a quiet guy. But on the field, he's been brilliant. Anyways, back to the game. The first 70 minutes, nothing.
Yes.
Literally, no one needed to be there. Just no one needed to be there. It was lethargic. It was slow. The stadium had only half attendance. It was quiet. Nothing was happening. It was just a waste of everyone's time. I woke up at 8 a.m., wasted everyone's time.
My brother-in-law in Cargo woke up at like 5:30.
Oh, man. People need to, including myself, need to start learning what Arsenal are capable of. First 70 minutes, absolutely nothing happened. Shaqiri had the two best chances in the game, hit the post directly from a corner. Ospina had his little injury scare as every game. I'm so done with him, it's insane. And then the last 15 minutes, we kind of kicked on a bit. We got a penalty by Ozil driving into the box. People are saying it's 50-50, maybe no, it's not a penalty. That's
100% penalty.
See, I'm really glad you're saying it because I thought I was crazy. Because everybody I've heard said it's not a penalty, and no one seems to point at what I saw. I know the guy kind of got a little glimpse of the ball, but I saw the guy's foot get in the way of where Ozil's trying to strike.
That's and then he hit the guy's foot. That's all I saw. I didn't even see if he got the ball. He got the ball through Ozil. I didn't see him get the ball before Ozil.
Not a single person, and this is Ars Blog, this is callers, this is shows on TV, not a single person said the guy put his foot in front and Ozil kicked it instead of the ball.
Maybe I have to go watch it again, but to me,
that's what I thought.
If you watch the motion of Ozil, it's the only way he falls that way is because he was impeded.
Yes.
And maybe his foot swung back and hit the guy. I don't care. He was impeded. To me, that I thought the second one was, yes, also a penalty. Yeah. But if you want to argue one,
you can argue that one. Yeah. Aubameyang scored the penalty. He took it even though Lacazette came on the field. And people are really excited about Lacazette and Aubameyang playing together. Lacazette back from an injury. He only had like one goal in 13 before his form really dipped before his injury, etc. And we really needed him in Europa, which is great timing because he's going to start now on Thursday instead of Welbeck. Thank the Lord. And they both played together for that last 20 minutes. We looked much better. Lacazette's movement is still by far the best in this team. That's his best asset. It's his movement. He knows where to be, where to go. He needs to work better once he gets the ball, but he's just always in the right spot. And that's how we got our second penalty. But Aubameyang's goal was actually really well taken from the corner. He adjusted his body well enough to kind of put it into the bottom right, slice through it. I think it was a good sign from our new striker, let's say. He has, I think, 5 goals in 6 appearances in the league.
Yeah.
Again, quietly. But not bad numbers for someone who's new to the Premier League and still kind of getting used to this team, especially for a January transfer.
Yeah, I like the fact that he gave that the last penalty to Lacazette. I think it's good sportsmanship. I think it builds morale in the dressing room, which is important considering apparently what will happen with Alexis. Question. People were wondering, how can you get these two guys on the same team?
Yeah.
Have you guys... I know you've experimented with a back three at times.
Yes.
If you do that,
then you can play two up top.
But and then, let's say it's Ozil right behind.
Yep.
And then you have to have two in the middle.
Shaka Ramsey. So you play Shaka Ramsey, Ozil in the three. And then Aubameyang, Lacazette. And then you have Bellerin, Monreal.
And Mkhitaryan's on the bench.
See? That's the thing.
Or do you say... Do you pull a City and bring Ozil back to be a deep line playmaker and still do your passes because he has the best range of passing in the team and have a, not Ramsey, but a real defensive midfielder to sit next to him?
So here's the thing.
To free him up, quote unquote.
Assuming it's Arsene Wenger, he's done with five at the back. He's done. He's done with that. That's out the window. We're playing four at the back. So realistically, that's not going to happen. He could shunt our new 50, 60 million, has 140 goals in whatever, out wide left. He could put Aubameyang there. And I feel that might happen.
Or a 4-3-3, perhaps.
Well, yes, a 4-3-3, but Aubameyang, like, wide left, not as a striker.
But
like,
if you do it the Barcelona way, it doesn't matter. They all roll.
Sorry, who's going to do
this? I know.
So, is Messi joining us? That is the Barcelona. We'll get to La Liga. And... without Messi, there is no Barcelona.
Well, this is the MSN version, not this version. Because this version, we'll get there, our trash.
So that's Lacazette, Aubameyang, and Mkhitaryan.
I think have them as a three.
Mal? Isn't that bad in Spanish?
I think it's bad in any language.
But yeah, I don't think he's going to get them both in the team at the same time. Yeah, but probably. He should. He should. They're 250 million strikers. Whatever. We're not going to do anything anyways. This is how fun.
Apparently good players can play together. So
apparently. Figure it Mkhitaryan, out. Mkhitaryan, Ozil, all four need to play. And that's it. What else? Let's go through the scores really quickly because I want to move on. Wow. We're 55 minutes in. Let's talk about Leicester. Leicester beat Brighton with 10 men. Mm-hmm. Again, Leicester are just always consistent, always... I like watching them. They're a lot of fun.
Why are Everton ahead of them in the table?
They're not. They just... They,
really? Finally?
Leicester are 3 points ahead with the game in hand.
Oh, thank the Lord. Yeah. Because so it was weird. I'm sorry.
Leicester could actually go over Burnley. They're only 3 points behind them.
So they could go Leicester. Seven. I do like them. I hope that happens.
Yeah. Newcastle beat Huddersfield 1-0.
Vital
point. Watford, Bournemouth 2-2. I think Watford were 2-0 up, if I'm not mistaken. No, Bournemouth scored first. Then Watford, Watford 1-0, Bournemouth 1-1. Then Watford, and then Jermaine Defoe, 90th minute equalizer.
I haven't heard his name in a long
time. Yeah, he hasn't really been playing.
West Brom
West Brom lost to Burnley 2-1 at home.
Ashley Barnes. Did you see that?
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
And this was before I saw Zlatan. I was like, what is going on?
He's been having a great season. And as a result of this loss, Alan Pardew can now still say that he has never been relegated from the league. So he has that going for him after the sacking.
So who's the bottom three right now?
So the bottom three are Southampton, Stoke, and West Brom. West Brom are so far by their 7 points from 19. From relegation, they're 10 points.
They're gone,
taking with them two Egyptians, which is unfortunate.
They'll get. Higazi will definitely get a team.
I hope so, because Stoke is also getting relegated, and they have my boy.
So do we? Before we move on to the other leagues, do we think? So West Brom, we know, are going down 100%. I think West Ham saved themselves
3-0
with this win. Hopefully,
Arnautovic is now free from the shackles of what's his name, whatever the manager they just
Bilic?
No. Moyes. He just sacked one recently.
No.
No?
It was Bilic and Moyes is still there, right? Like, he hasn't been sacked yet.
I don't know. I just heard someone say something about, like, how he's now free.
Anyway. Well, Moyes doesn't do whatever he wants.
Yeah, yeah, true. But West Ham are in 14th, but that means nothing. That's 3 points away from relegation. Yeah.
But I feel like they will do it. I think they will survive this.
So who's going to go down? West Brom and Stoke? Yeah, both are going to go down?
How many points does Stoke have?
Stoke are only 3 points away from relegation.
And it's Southampton? I think only one of those two goes down.
Southampton will go down? You think?
I don't know. I think Huddersfield go down.
Yeah, that's a good point. I think Huddersfield, Stoke, West Brom.
Yeah, I think that's my three.
I would love Stoke and West Brom to go because I'm done.
Yes.
I'm done with Stoke. Everybody is.
Yeah.
And West Brom have just clung on for too long. They played the most boring, long football. Like, I just don't want to watch them anymore.
I also don't mind the idea of Southampton going down because I think they have some assets that could be useful around the league.
Right, right. And since we're talking about this, I just opened up the championship table here. Wolves are top of the table, 85 points. And Cardiff City are in second with 80 points.
Where Villa? Third?
So Villa are fourth. So basically the top two make it automatically. How many teams are in the...
There's 24.
There's 24 teams, so that makes it...
44 games.
44 games. So this is at 39 games.
Yeah.
So we've got 5 games to go. Wolves and Cardiff look relatively safe in the first and second. They should both remain there. Then you got Fulham, Villa, Derby, and Middlesbrough in the 3, yeah. 4, 5, 6. And then you've got Bristol City, Millwall, Sheffield United, Preston North End, and Brentford only like 5 points away from that sixth spot. Anything can happen.
The championship, to me, is always more entertaining.
You know what? Next time we go to England for one of these trips, we should go see one of these championship games. I'm down to kind of stand on a fence and watch a game.
I'm down.
But anyways, let's move on and do... Oh, we didn't do Mumu. Is it Mumu?
Let's just go through leagues.
You know what? Fine. Let's do it. We're not even going to do an interlude. Let's just go through it. La Liga. What do you want to talk about with La Liga?
Messi!
You sure you want
to
get this?
Listen, if I'm doing this, and you know how I am, you have made me numb to Lionel Messi, but I'll talk about him this week.
Thank you.
Barcelona, and I'm going to say this right now.
Say it.
Barcelona without Messi are trash.
Thank you.
Unbelievable. Like, they would finish third or fourth in the Premier League, maybe.
People don't realize how actually bad... They're unbeaten, and we're saying they're bad. Yeah. It's insane. Umtiti and Piqué have been rocks at the back, with Ter Stegen, who could be argued as one of the best keepers this year in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And then you've got Alba, or or yeah, Alba.
Who's having a fantastic
game. Great. So those guys are shoring it up at the back, which is why they're unbeaten.
Mm-hmm.
Anything in front of that has been nothing.
Mm-hmm.
So Suarez started to come back. Beginning of the season, non-existent. Dembele, still non-existent. Paulini started off hot, cooled down. Rakitic, unfortunately, have been useless. Coutinho is nowhere to be seen. This team is still so reliant on Messi. This goal, Messi cut the ball in his own half, dribbled it up, then scored the goal. Like, you'd think at one point they would stop relying on him so much. Same with Madrid and Ronaldo.
Yep.
But you are so good, both of them, that it's just inevitable.
But at what point do you, as a defender or as an opposition team, just decide, guys, I'm going for his knee. I'm just going for it.
Yeah.
At this point, if an opposition player just went and did a Roy Keane, Alfie Ingaholland thing, would you hate them for it?
I wouldn't blame them.
Like, I'd be like, at this point, go ahead, bro.
I wouldn't blame
them. It's okay, because we know how terrible those teams are without those two guys, so go for it.
There is no... I mean, technically, that should be an Atletico Madrid player going, you know what, Godin, take the season off.
Yeah?
Take your 18-game ban, but go right through Messi, and that's it, you win the league.
Yeah.
It's insane. Like, it's insane.
Actually, 15 years ago is what happened.
Oh, what's his name?
Vinny Jones, Wimbledon, they would have done that.
Atleti manager.
Simeone.
How is his team talk at the beginning of the season not injure Messi? You injure Messi, we win the league.
Yes.
Not.
Yes.
But yeah, this was insane. I mean, they were 2-0 down to a very good Sevilla. Jesus Navas was playing a brilliant game, blah, blah, blah. Everyone, what's his name? The defensive mid, tall dude.
Nzonzi,
killing it as usual, as he killed United. And, sorry, I have to.
I accept that.
I tweeted a brilliant tweet, by the way. United fans were sitting there in their drafts waiting to go, see, Sevilla beat Barcelona, they're not that bad.
You know what? I saw that tweet, and I was mad at you.
Yeah, but
I let it go, because you know what? I would have gone ballistic at any United fan that said that, because Sevilla are still trash.
But you know they were waiting. They were waiting.
Of course, I know who they are.
Yeah. And then, deserved 2-0 lead, everything going swimmingly well, Messi comes on 70 minutes, no way, Barcelona look horrendous, I think Rakitic hits the post, counter-attack, Jesus Navas, idiotic decision to try and go around Ter Stegen, doesn't score the one-on-one, and then other side comes in, Suarez with a brilliant side foot off the corner into the top.
That was a brilliant finish.
Because he had to come back away from goal.
Brilliant finish.
Put it in, and then Messi... Barcelona got lucky that whoever that ball was intended to, in the middle, Coutinho, etc., couldn't get it.
Was it Alba?
Yeah, Alba.
Because Alba, you know what Alba does? Alba plays without seeing. Like, all he does is, I'm going down this flank, and I'm pulling it back to the middle. I assume Messi is there.
I swear to you, Suarez could be standing in the 6-yard box, alone, on a beach chair, and the ball is still getting cut back to Messi between three players, and you cannot blame him.
Yes!
Alba has made a career from cutting the ball back to Messi. Literally a career.
You think he actually is aware of actually what's going on? He just goes, so he's usually over here.
Yes.
I'm just going to play this back.
And I mean, I'm sure defenders and managers have seen this, and why does everyone just run into the box and leave Messi on the... Okay, the thing with Messi is this. A lot of his goals seem like they're just side foot passing to the goal.
Mm-hmm.
But you look at the number of goals that are outside the box, they don't feel like outside of the box goals. They're not strikes in the top corner. They're not hit as hard as he can. He just goes, bloop.
This one curled around the defender, I think. Yes. And then the goalie had no chance. But I struggle to understand something. And it's also something I've noticed with Ronaldo.
By the way, I think it was Coutinho that cut it back, but everything we said still stands.
Applies, yes. Sure. He didn't do it as well, though.
No.
Because the defender should have cleared
him.
Yeah, so that's why. Yeah. But in this Messi and Ronaldo world, and they both do this in very different ways, I always wonder, and Harry Kane now is getting there, why are they always open? And Messi has to do it from outside the box and then launch a hell of a shot into the net, whatever, or just on the tip of the box. But those two guys, don't tell me movement. Because notice the ball always goes to exactly where they always are.
Yeah, it can be movement. It just can be, because movement, you just follow him. Like, what movement? Like, you just go, stand there.
And these are the two best players in the world. Messi has been free 100 times on the edge of the box.
I'll tell you what it is.
I don't understand.
People don't learn. They look at him and they go, surely, he is way too far from the action. I should mark this other dude in the 6-yard box. And that makes sense logically. In an ideal world, you go, 6-yard box, dude? Messi on the edge of the box. 6-yard box, dude. You pick the 6-yard box, dude.
Yeah.
But no. That's the mistake. You leave Dembele in the box completely open, and you go and stand on Messi. If Messi's in the halfway line, you literally go stand on Messi.
I don't care who you are. Just stand there. Just block him off.
Oh, man. It's
and injure him.
Insane. Cool. It was... Yeah, I enjoyed it. I sent you guys a voice recording of...
I didn't listen to it till today.
Yeah, it was brilliant. Madrid beat Las Palmas 3-0 away from home. Gareth Bale, back with 2 goals, a goal and a penalty. That first goal is a Bale goal,
mm-hmm.
where he just runs down that flank. No one can catch him. He's still the fastest player on the field, mm-hmm. even though his injury and age and whatever.
Yeah.
Brilliant finish, top right, like just with purpose. You know, not like some trickle. He hits them pure. Luka Modric outside of the foot pass, mm-hmm. you know, the Tottenham glory days back. And then Benzema took a penalty, and he missed like a gazillion chances, man. Like, it's hilarious.
He's done. No Ronaldo, which tells you that they've decided it's all Champions League.
It's all Champions League. I mean, you look, if I open the table here, let's see. You've got Barcelona, 76 points. Again, the significance of that 2-2 is also to keep the unbeaten run going.
And mm-hmm.
if you think of it relatively, if Barcelona, this team, goes unbeaten when the 09 and 10 and 08 and whatever haven't, it doesn't make sense logically. You know,
okay.
I think...
So,
tell me.
This is where... What you said now is such an interesting point.
Yes.
Me. Pep Guardiola, best man in the world.
Sure.
I'm not going to debate that with anybody.
Okay.
Sticking to it. And you know me and Pep.
Yes.
I have my issues.
Yes.
Sticking my...
Pep knows.
Exactly. Yes. I'm sure he knows, but he has to know.
He listens to the podcast.
He's gotten my tweets.
Yeah.
I secretly just tweet.
He's in
your
DMs.
Even though I don't have his own account, I just tweet him anyway.
Yeah.
But you look at... And if you look at Luis Enrique won the treble,
mm-hmm.
Pep won the treble,
mm-hmm.
if I'm not mistaken. He won a treble. Tito came after him. And a lot of people came out and said Tito was actually the tactical genius behind
right.
that. Whatever. Now, if Valverde
mm-hmm.
can get a treble
yeah.
and get a treble unbeaten, does it bring down the legend of Pep Guardiola? Or and by the way, ultimately, with players who are not as good.
Oh, definitely not as good.
And the Lionel Messi who is supposed to be on
over the hill.
Like, over the hill. Like, I get it. Like,
does it
diminish it a little bit?
Circumstances, obviously, different variables at different times. You know, was Madrid a stronger team back then? Was Atletico a stronger team now? So, yes. I mean, it's hard to compare
mm-hmm.
across times.
Mm-hmm.
But yes, this would definitely be... at least on par of an achievement
mm-hmm.
for Valverde. I mean, Luis Enrique treble, they went the first half of that season in the league looking like they were actually going to come fourth.
Yeah, it was a shambles.
Exactly. So
Messi didn't want to play wide.
Messi didn't want to play wide. I think Luis Enrique's treble is underrated
mm-hmm.
because he had to build that team with the Neymar. He had to bring Neymar into the fold. He had to
mm-hmm.
make Messi happy again, etc., mm-hmm. etc. They had MSN, but their midfield was... you know, a hoax.
Mm-hmm.
Iniesta this season, old. Unfortunately, as much as it pains me to say it, not the same guy on the field anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So yes, but I think this all is null because they're not going to win a treble. I don't think they're good enough to win a Champions League. They will not beat the Bayern.
Right.
They will not beat even
Madrid. But with Messi on the pitch, anything is possible.
Sure.
And that's the trump card.
Yeah, but then you also have Rakitic on the field. So, you know, like, yeah. Atleti 1-1-0. Another game not conceding,
mm-hmm.
which, again, Arsenal fans love to follow Atleti's league scores because of the whole, they're the best team in the Europa that are left. And the Arsenal kind of hope and dream is to play them in the final and have this epic final and then lose. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, but still, whatever. So if you look at the table really quickly here, you've got Barcelona at 76 points, Atleti at 67, so they're 9 points away. I mean, this league is... Madrid at 63, and Valencia at 62. Madrid could come fourth.
Yeah, they could.
When is the last time that happened? Wow.
I think a manager got sacked when that happened.
I mean, your chance of saying a manager got sacked is...
Very high.
Very high that you are correct.
I know we're running out of time, but there's...
It's so much fun, though.
I know. And there's a big question that we asked ourselves on our thread. I just want to bring it up because I think the listeners may have an interesting time with this.
Oh, yeah.
And it's Jupinkis for me. Eden Hazard question is one.
Oh, I thought that one. Okay.
But I feel like if I have to pick one question,
sure.
it's the Jupinkis
one. Let's
talk about that. We never really get into Germany. They won 6-0. James is playing well. Müller's playing well
against
again.
Dortmund. Let's make that clear.
Yeah. They bulldozed the second quote best team in Germany. But
Do you agree with me before the argument that they are the favorites for the Champions League?
My favorites.
Okay. Absolutely. I'm glad we agree.
Yeah, I think they're the best balanced team in the Champions League. But Jupp Heynckes was not on my radar before 2012.
No.
And this is a man who's been managing for 30 plus years, won the Champions League with Real Madrid, if I'm not mistaken, in 98. I think he was a manager. But he was just not on anyone's radar. He was not the sexy choice, whatever. He won the treble with Bayern Munich. And realistically, he could win another treble right now.
He'll win a double minimum.
Yes. And this was a team that, for all intents and purposes, were in crisis not too long ago.
Didn't they already win the league like a week ago?
Well, I think...
No, sorry. They won like a cup already a week ago.
I think they win the league like next week.
And they win the league next week?
Yeah, something like that.
Wow. So he already has a double under his belt.
Yeah. And they were in trouble.
He's an interim manager, technically.
And because now they're looking at Tuchel, I'm like, really?
Really?
Just keep him. Like, what are you doing? But for me, it's like, and this is, again, a little bit of a situation where I'm like, this man is incredibly underrated, the job that he's done. Not just at Bayern Munich, but around Europe.
Yeah.
And again, people still look at a Pep. People still look at a Jose Mourinho, even though to me he's on the decline. How can you possibly look at these guys and not mention Jupp Heynckes?
Because the world we live in is a social media driven world where you need to be a star in the limelight. You just have to be. This is why Pogba dabs. He doesn't dab because he enjoys dabbing. He dabs because his agent tells him to dab. Jupp Heynckes' agent needs to tell him to do something.
To dab. Dab after every goal. Yes, Jupp Heynckes. Go crazy like Pep.
Something. Look, sorry, everybody. I hit the table. Everybody needs something.
Mm-hmm.
And Carvajal will be remembered for his little sentences. Jupp needs to be remembered. I mean, you think it's crazy. He won a treble. What more does he need to be remembered for? But you just need to.
Yeah.
And again, Bayern Munich, unfortunately, are in the Bundesliga. And people don't look at the Bundesliga as much as the attention isn't there as much as the Premier League and et cetera, mm-hmm. and the La Liga. So no one really cares too much about the double.
Yeah.
The double only matters when it comes to the treble.
Yeah.
So that's kind of what goes for him a little bit. But when you look at it and you actually dissect it, he's been one of the best managers in the last 10 years. He's been phenomenal.
He's been simply unbelievable. And I really do think that a lot of people are underestimating just how good this Bayern Munich team really is.
Yep.
Because City are doing a sexy thing in England. Messi is in Barcelona. Real Madrid are the Champions League team. Yeah, whatever.
They don't have that guy.
But this Bayern Munich team are so, so dangerous and balance every part of the pitch. And they believe in Jupp Heynckes.
Yep.
That's the most important part.
People love to say that, well, so easy managing Bayern Munich. Well, we saw it didn't work out for the first half of the season with Ancelotti.
Mm-hmm.
He had to go. So clearly it's not as simple as everyone thinks.
Right. Pep could only take them so far.
Pep couldn't even win it's just keeping that motivation in such accomplished players going. I mean,
mm-hmm.
Jupp Heynckes recently came out saying, I have to drag Ribery, who's like 30, whatever, who plays as a winger and mm-hmm. is still relies on his speed, off the training ground.
Mm-hmm.
Robin, he has to tell him to please stop pushing himself so hard in training. And that doesn't just come, of course they're professional players and they want to succeed, but that doesn't come without a manager there that they're playing for.
Right.
Javi Martinez is having a resurgent time as a defensive midfielder,
mm-hmm.
all because of Jupp Heynckes. So it's not always easy just to say, well, they've got a great team.
Yeah.
There you go. It's not that simple, and you have to give him credit. Also, I want to give credit to the players. Robin and Ribéry could have easily been done 3 years ago. They could have just said, look, I've won everything there is to win. This is my cap, and I'm done. But they're still, I mean, Robin is still a game changer. Ribéry comes on and still kills it. These guys are old.
I also have a lot of respect for Heynckes because James Rodriguez's career was going a certain way. Down. There was nowhere for him to go. No team wanted to touch him. The wages, the transfer fee that these guys, Bayern Munich or any team would have had to... Real Madrid wanted their 60 million back or whatever it was. They wanted it back. No one was going to do that because he didn't fit in. He didn't show anything. And rightfully so. Bayern took a 2-year loan, which to me is... We said it at the time. You can't lose anything there. That's genius.
Genius.
And Heynckes. Ancelotti couldn't fit him in. Heynckes, I don't believe any other manager in the world could have figured out James Rodriguez. And look at what Heynckes is doing.
James is having one of, again, under the radar, one of the best seasons of any player in the leagues this season.
Mm-hmm.
This season. He's been phenomenal. Against Dortmund, he literally picked them apart.
Mm-hmm.
James is having a phenomenal season in a team that he didn't fit in earlier on.
Mm-hmm.
And again, yes, this is down to coaching because James is a great player.
Yeah.
Now, can Zidane do the same when he gets James back, or will he just give him away?
I don't think, again, I think it's systems. I don't think, if I'm Zinedine Zidane, I've won Champions League 2 years in a row.
Clearly, I don't need James.
I don't need James. It's great, but I can't figure out James. I don't need to figure out
James. We talked about this in the Martial case. Why isn't Mourinho just coaching Martial into the player he wants him to be as opposed to going, he's not the guy I want him to be, sell him. Coach him into the guy you want him to be. Help him achieve his potential. That's literally the job of a manager.
Pep Guardiola does it.
Pochettino does it. Look at
Sterling. I don't believe... And by the way, Sterling is nowhere... Sterling before Pep Guardiola and Anthony Martial, you don't have a conversation about those two players.
No.
So for someone to tell me that another manager couldn't turn him into a world beater, he almost
is. Honestly, you look at Barcelona troubles, you look at winning the league earlier, as earliest thing as possible. I don't care if Pep wins the World Cup with Manchester City. I don't know how, but he could still do it. Getting Sterling to play at this level is by far
the greatest achievement,
the number one achievement of all time in all of football history. I did not think he could kick a ball. And I know he had his
11. You thought he was going to throw him away.
100%. I remember
that. We all thought that.
100%. And I was like, how? Pep, how? How is Sterling playing this kind of football?
Coaching.
Coaching, which is, that's who you are. You're a coach.
So we ended with Mourinho shit. Like, somehow, all this rigmarole and it's Mourinho shit.
We could have saved everyone 1:15 and just started with Mourinho shit and we could have just moved on with our lives.
Amazing.
Yeah, Champions League big games coming up.
Yeah.
Midweek, Europa League huge games coming up.
There's a Manchester derby, there's a Merseyside derby. There's
a Liverpool City, there's a...
There's I think Madrid derby.
Yeah.
If I'm not mistaken.
Yes.
There's one in Italy as well.
People were saying Madrid fans are don't know how to feel about this game. They beat Atleti, they hand the title to Barca. But if they lose to Atleti, they could go for it. It's a bit of a...
And our co-ed team final against a mixed team.
Yes.
And because Amit, for the listeners, he thinks Mourinho is actually good and not shit. Like, this is actually important to me.
Just for that, he deserves to lose that final.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I mean, this was fun.
Yeah.
We'll talk to you guys next week.
Peace.
Thank you for downloading the KoshCast. Get in touch at underthekoshblog@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter at under_thekosh. And for articles, predictions, and the full experience, go to underthekoshblog.com.